Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America podcast. I'm JJ Cooper alongside Ben Badler, as we're going to talk a little AL Central prospects today and also take a little broader look and look also at kind of some of the top prospects list that we've had over the last decade and kind of see how that compares to maybe one of the top teams we have this year. But before we do that, I want to remind everyone that we are sponsored, as we have been for a while now, by the podcast is sponsored by MLB Network. And if you're a Baseball America podcast listener, you probably already know this, but MLB Network's coverage does not end with the World Series. Hot Stove League coverage, you know, we check it out all the time, and obviously you should as well if you're trying to keep on top of what's happening for your team in the off season as we head into, we just came out of the GM meetings, we'll be heading into winter meetings next month, and you know, let several trades happen this week. Before we kind of dive into the AL Central, I would ask you, Ben, what any trade this week that has surprised you, or any potential trade that you're hearing about?
Well, I think the big surprise is that Justin Upton is available, and you know, I think we'll talk about him a little bit when we're talking about some of the best farm systems. But the fact that they're making him available is kind of shocking, because you never. You really never see a guy with that kind of youth and talent
and production
and production already become available in a trade. And to think, it's sort of hard to wrap your mind around what it would take to be able to acquire Justin Upton in a trade. It sounds like one of those we get emails or questions in chat. Well, could we trade a bunch of our marginal prospects for some superstar like Justin Upton? You think, all right, well, come on, this is ridiculous. But then you hear he actually is on the trading block, and to be able to wrap your mind around what exactly it would take to acquire Justin Upton in a trade is it's difficult to kind of comprehend, because there's really not much historical precedent for it.
And if you did trade him, I mean, for one, I mean, we should note that his contract is actually pretty reasonable for the next several years as
Absolutely.
Well. So this is not a case of trading a 28-year-old, you know, with 2 years left on this deal, who's going to be making $15 million or anything like that. But with that, you know, yeah, it's almost like do the rules almost get thrown out? Like with a guy like that, would you need two elite prospects, three elite prospects?
I think you need at least two truly, elite prospects, because it's – and really, how many teams can even pull off a deal like that? The Rays, I think, have the talent. You know, the Royals we'll get to. You know, they have the talent, but I'm not sure it would really make sense for them to just go after Upton and trade away what they have on the farm. But there really aren't many teams that I think would be able to give the Diamondbacks the return that – you know, if I was a GM of the Diamondbacks, that I would want and feel comfortable trading away a player like Justin Upton for.
Because if you're trading away Justin Upton, the other thing about it is that you can't trade him for a relatively young, you know, somewhat proven, inexpensive major leaguer as the cornerstone, because that's just, in some ways, that's just trading Justin Upton for Justin Upton. I mean, that's, you know, or a lesser version of Justin Upton. So, but if you trade him for prospects saying, hey, okay, we think we're a couple of years away. Well, as you said, if you're talking about elite prospects, you eliminate probably 15 to 20 teams right there, because this is not a trade that you can do by saying, okay, well, give us one elite prospect and give us five other guys who are so-so, and we'll see if we find something out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you look and, you know, Cameron Maben was traded and Andrew Miller were both traded, you know, within the last week. Their value, you know, what they got for Miguel Cabrera, you would have to top what those guys were, I think, at the time to be able to acquire Justin Upton. You'd have to be able to top the Cabrera deal. Obviously, Miller and Maben haven't developed quite as you'd expect, although I think Maben is still very young. He's younger than Desmond Jennings, who is still an elite prospect. So I think you'd have to come up with a huge package to be able to acquire Justin Upton.
You mentioned, you know, okay, the Royals and Rays are two teams that could, if they wanted to, at least be involved in that, because, I mean, if you just said, if you're just talking about prospects, either of them, I mean, the Rays have, you know, they could do a Desmond Jennings, do a Matt Moore, or a Jeremy Hellickson, or you know, if they were really wanted them, all three, that would be...
Or throwing a guy like Garza or Shields if they want, you know, more major league.
Right, but those are elite prospects. The Royals have probably five guys who would qualify as truly elite prospects right now. But the question with that then becomes like, you know, the Yankees have, in Jesus Montero, clearly, I mean, he's an elite prospect.
Mm-hmm.
But they have several other very good prospects, but I don't know if there's anyone else that you could truly qualify as elite. If you were talking about saying you need two top 20 prospects as part of this, I don't know if the Yankees have another top 20 prospect. I think you could say the same thing. The Red Sox are usually linked with deals like this. I don't know if the Red Sox, you could maybe say Casey Kelly's a top 20 prospect, but I don't know if, you know, if there's another Red Sox prospect who would make that cut.
I don't think they – I don't see how the Red Sox would have the talent to even pull off a deal for Upton. I mean, yeah, you have Casey Kelly. You have, you know, in the major leagues, maybe you have Daniel Bard or Ellsbury you want to throw in. But, you know, those guys are not the kind of talent that – you know, you can start with Kelly and Ellsbury and Bard, and that's, you know, a decent start, but yeah, I still think you need more elite talent than that coming in return. And I don't think the Red Sox have that kind of talent at the top of their farm system to be able to, you know, whether it's Iglesias or Rizzo or whoever. I just don't see that the Red Sox have the kind of talent that would justify parting ways with Justin Upton.
And really what it comes down to, again, is it's just hard for us to wrap your brain around, though, why you would want to trade away Justin Upton, because this is the kind of guy that you build a team around, not the kind of guy that you try to, you know, you trade away and say, okay, well, we're – because I don't feel like that the Diamondbacks are looking at it as starting over, because if they are, they're a long ways away, because that farm system's not a farm system that's ready to produce enough to be, you know, kind of the cornerstones. The cornerstones are not sitting in AA saying, okay, well, we're a year or two away right now.
No, I think you'll get the Royals. They might trade one of their elite players. They might trade Zach Greinke, and that makes a little bit more sense because your window for competition is more likely going to be a few years down the road.
Right.
Who knows if Greinke is still going to be there then. Maybe you want to trade Greinke at, you know, this isn't the peak of his value, but when
still
he's healthy
very,
and still one of the most dominant pitchers in baseball. So that I can understand. Upton, you know, I know he has, you know, he had some shoulder problems. Maybe that's a little bit more than they're letting on, but you know, obviously none of us have, you know, intimate knowledge of what's going on inside Justin Upton's shoulders, so it's really hard to understand.
That's part of Baseball America 3.0. We're going to get the little, you know, we're going to shrink ourselves down and just, you know, swim around in Justin Upton's shoulder. And
start getting x-rays.
Yeah. Before we jump into the AL Central, we had a couple of questions on our Facebook page, which, thanks again, facebook.com/baseballamerica, I believe. And you can shoot questions to there. You can shoot them to podcast@baseballamerica.com as well. But a couple of Indians questions, so I wanted to ask them to you because Ben Badler did our Indians list, which just posted up on the site this week and is also in the issue that should be hitting subscribers' mailboxes really any day now. But so a couple questions on the Indians. One here from Jobu for Cleveland, so I think that's a major league fan. But he asked, what did you guys like about Chisenhall that put him over Kipnis, who had a better statistical year? So I'll turn it over to you, Ben.
I think with Chisenhall, maybe Kipnis's numbers were a little bit better, but I think there's a couple things there. One is, you know, Kipnis is, you know, a little bit older than Chisenhall, which is, you know, as a mental shortcut, you know that Chisenhall was drafted before Kipnis, but at the same time, Kipnis still is older than Chisenhall. The other thing is I think Chisenhall, Kipnis has a good swing. It's very loose, very handsy swing. You know, I think we ranked him pretty aggressively still, but at the same time, it's not that pure. You know, he can get long a little bit at times, whereas Chisenhall is very short, compact. You know, they're both very balanced hitters who can, you know, they can both use the whole field, but I think Chisenhall's swing and his bat speed and his power potential, you know, Kipnis is very strong hands, really uses his hands well and can, you know, he's not a big guy, but he'll surprise you with the power he can hit. But I think Chisenhall, he's not going to be a 30-plus homer guy the way maybe a Moustakas would be, but I think he has the potential to regularly hit 20, 25 home runs a year, hit for a little bit more power. His numbers, and you know, we talked about it in the write-up, in Chisenhall's write-up, but I think what really held down his numbers early in the year was that he was trying to play through a shoulder injury.
Which that's always, as a hitter, that's a tough injury.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, we make a lot about, you know, pitcher injuries and how that affects our performance, but if you're a hitter and you're trying to play through a shoulder injury, you know, it can affect you a lot of different ways, physically and mentally. You know, you're taking, you know, how many swings are you taking in BP every day that you're trying to really let it loose, but it's hard to when your shoulder, it's such a complex joint, to be able to, you know, swing at, to keep your swing consistent and to generate the power that you would normally have if your shoulder were healthy, it's really, really difficult to do. And
to get that full release at the end of your swing, because there's kind of that, if you got that back of your head that, oh, this
oh,
is
yeah.
going to hurt.
I mean, Scott Rolen had a, you know, pretty major shoulder injury. I believe it was in his early or mid-30s, and he had to adjust his swing, you know, as a result of it. So, you know, guys can – Chisenhall wasn't that serious, which is I don't think it's a concern going – or not a major concern going forward, but I think it really kind of took a bite into his numbers early in the year. So, you know, when you look at the final numbers, they're solid, not spectacular, but if you look at what he did once he came back from that shoulder injury and was healthy again and swinging the bat that, you know, he's capable of, I think that's where you see the numbers really took off from there.
Another Indians question we had, Nick Kruger asked, how much consideration did Matt Packer get for Cleveland's top 10? Because he was amazing this year and completely skipped High A Kinston.
Unbelievable year, yeah. It's
almost back-to-back, or almost ERA titles in two of the last 3 years in college and then the...
You look at his draft status and he's just one of those guys who, you know, he really knows how to pitch and you think, all right, maybe he's just an or guy. I mean, he's not just an or guy. I think the Indians have the kind of talent where he wasn't really in consideration for the top 10, but he should be there in the top 30 when the prospect handbook comes out, because he's more than just a guy with, you know, a mid-80s fastball throwing, you know, fringy stuff out there who's just has a really good idea of how to get,
right,
you know,
he's
lower
not
hitters out. He's more than that. He's, you know, 88 to 91. He'll get up to 92, 93 there at times. But he's not about power. He's about throwing strikes, keeping hitters off balance, keeping the ball on the ground, which he does a great, great job of. And he's a left-hander with a good changeup. You know, if you're a left-hander, you can throw the fastball and the changeup for strikes, and they're good pitchers. They're both good pitches, like they are with Packer. You can have success because you're going to face a lot of right-handed batters, and that's going to be able to, you know, his breaking stuff isn't going to be big power breaking stuff. It's going to get a lot of swings and misses, but he's going to keep a lot of hitters off balance, be able to pitch to right-handed hitters well, and keep the ball on the ground. So, you know, I don't see him as necessarily a top of the rotation kind of guy, but he can fit in there somewhere in the back of the rotation, and I think he's really going to be a steal for the Indians at some point.
Right. He's more of a projects as a number four, number five, right, which those guys usually don't make the top 10 because it's a mixture of ceiling and, you know, and likelihood of reaching that. But in his case, he seems like a pretty safe back end of the rotation guy.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, how safe he is, it's I think there's a lot of guys who sometimes we call safe, like just because they have back of the rotation potential. So, you know, is he a safe kind of guy? I don't know, but I think he does have the ability to pitch in the back of the rotation.
Right. Well, moving on from that, one of the things we want to talk about today, we have not released our organization talent rankings, and we won't do that for a while. We'll have a version of that that'll be in the prospect handbook when that comes out. We're working on that now. Send it to the printers right before Christmas, and it'll be in, if you purchase it through baseballamerica.com, go to our store, you'll have it in your hands, hopefully, I believe the last I saw was in late January. So, but with that, we haven't given the official who's going to be number one or anything like that, but I don't think we're giving anything away. I think we've said it multiple times on the site that the Royals look pretty safe that they will be the number one organization this year when we come out with those rankings. We rolled out the top 10 for them this week as well, and with that, we kind of wanted to take a little broader view on the podcast and kind of look at some of the number one organizations in recent years when we've done this, and kind of maybe compare a little bit like what the Royals list now looks like compared to those lists then. And so we picked out a couple of the top tens from teams that we ranked number one. First off, I'll go back to 2003. We had the Indians number one, and back then we had Brandon Phillips number one, who now is a very, very solid second baseman for the Reds. We have Victor Martinez, two, which if you're listening to this, you know Victor Martinez. Cliff Lee, three, he's pretty good, too. Jeremy Guthrie, four, who's now a solid rotation guy in Baltimore. Travis Hafner, five. Ricardo Rodriguez, six. Grady Sizemore, pretty good, seven. Billy Traber, eight. Brian Tallett, nine. Jason Davis, 10. The question we're really trying to study a little bit with this is, I guess I'll throw the question out to you. You look at, like, this Royals top 10. That Indians top 10 right there was a big part of why the Indians made the playoffs, why they, you know, were up and down, but had some very solid years there, especially in the middle of the decade. But what, when you look at this Royals top 10, do you think that this is a list that could get the Royals actually above, you know, above 500 to start? But what do you think, I mean, when you look at it, do you think they have the potential to actually turn things around there?
Yeah, I think they do. The Indians list that you just talked about is really it's almost a best case scenario for pretty much almost every prospect that you just named hit their best case scenario.
I was gonna say Cliff Lee's a Cy Young caliber. I mean he's a number one starter.
Absolutely.
So that if you can get one number one starter, I mean those are so rare. There's not 30 of those out there. Grady Sizemore, when healthy, has been essentially a first division all-star center fielder. That's what you're looking to get. Travis Hafner has been kind of the anchor in the middle of an order that you're looking for. Victor Martinez is a catcher who hits for average at, you know, year after year after year is hard to find. And Brandon Phillips is one. Now they didn't get the benefit out of Brandon Phillips, but Brandon Phillips has been a very solid, kind of on the cusp of an all-star second baseman for multiple years now.
Yeah, and Guthrie, I think, is probably one of the more underrated starters in the American League, partly just because he doesn't have huge strikeout numbers and partly because he pitches in Baltimore. But, you know, that whole list, those guys all hit their, you know, when you come up with the rosiest projections you can come up with, those guys all hit them, which is remarkable.
That's a rare. If you have a top 10 that does that, and we should mention that, you know, we do top 30 in the book. Well, like Johnny Peralta was number 17. You know, they had a couple of other guys. Ryan Church was number 25. Coco Crisp, 26. So they had Josh Bard, 15. They had additional players in that top 30 who've become solid big leaguers as well. I think you touched on it, though, that that's a best-case scenario. One of the things I think when you're looking at a list like this Royals list, I mean, the top five, I did the list, the top five, if you just said number five prospect on the list is Mike Montgomery, there are a lot of teams out there who, if they had Mike Montgomery as their number one prospect, would be pretty happy with it. And there's a lot of teams who, realistically, if you put Mike Montgomery in their system, he would be their number one prospect.
I think you can make the case that he'd be the number one prospect in any system in the AL Central. Doing the Indian system, I would take Montgomery over, probably over Lonnie Chisenhall. I know he had some elbow problems this year, but
came back from it. Was throwing 95 again, and
he's one of the elite pitching prospects in the game. So I wouldn't have any problem putting him there. But how these guys develop. Obviously, it's interesting looking at the Royals list, too, because that Indians list had so many guys who came over in trades, like Phillips and Cliff Lee and Sizemore and guys from Latin America like Martinez and Peralta there at the end. But the Royals list is all guys that they drafted. So
yeah,
it's really a phenomenal job. They've been able to do this all through the draft.
And the interesting thing when you say the draft, there's not And it's entirely through the draft. Their Latin American program, which obviously you know a lot about, you know, everyone's Latin American program. Their Latin American program is better now, but it's still not, I mean, 1 through 10 on here is all draft guys. Now, 11 through 20, there's a number of very interesting Latin American prospects that are working in there. But yeah, it's no trades in that top 10 and completely done through the draft.
Yeah, and I think, you know, will this help the Royals get over the hump and become a contending team in the AL Central? You know, I think if you look at the historical precedent, what's happened in the past with these teams that have had great farm systems, teams that we've, you know, farm system that we've ranked number one or systems at the top, like the Indians, you know, back when or before they were coming, you know, before they were in the playoffs, you had the Indians, the Rays had an elite farm system.
I'll pull out another one. Here's the 08 Rays top 10, which this is another one that was number one for us. Evan Longoria 1, David Price 2, Jake McGee 3, Wade Davis 4, Reed Brignac 5, Desmond Jennings 6, Jeff Niemann 7, Jeremy Hellickson 8, Ryan Royster 9, Chris Mason 10. Tails off a little bit at the end there, Ryan Royster, Chris Mason, but you're talking about Niemann, Davis, Price are all members of their rotation. Now Longoria is one of the best players in the American League. Brignac's a starter for them as well, and Hellickson was our minor league player of the year this year and is ready for the rotation as well. That's another – that's it may not be as – we're not as far along, so we can't say it's the best-case scenario like the Indians, but that's another list that is – If the Royals can get that, they'd be pretty happy, I think.
It's almost as I think the Rays also have done a great job developing the guys that they have drafted too, and you know Price and Longoria so far I would say is pretty much the best case scenario, a Cy Young and an MVP caliber.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Price was second in the Cy Young this year in his second full season. That's pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
One other team I'll just pull out. Now, this was not number one. This was number three for us at the time. But Diamondbacks 2007, Justin Upton, Chris Young, Carlos Gonzalez, Alberto Callaspo, Miguel Montero, Micah Owings, Mark Reynolds, Dustin Nippert, Tony Pena, and Ross Ohlendorf. Which, again, I think what we keep, you know, coming back to, you got a top 10 there. 10 guys aren't going to make it. I think we can feel pretty confident on that. If 10 guys all make it as solid regulars, then you have the best prospect class of all time. But if it is going to be one of those elite ones, you will talk about down the road that 3 or 4 of those guys have become cornerstone-type players. And if you have that, that's a lot to build around, obviously.
And, I mean, even the Diamondbacks that year, they had drafted Scherzer, too.
Yeah, Scherzer
right?
Not signed yet, but they had drafted him. And so he was – if he had signed a little earlier, he would have been part of that top 10, too.
And that was Anderson, is Brett Anderson as well?
Brett Anderson was number 11.
Right. So, I mean, you had – that system had – I think the differences between what Cleveland did and what the Rays – what Cleveland and the Rays did is that they held on to all of their prospects. For the most part, I mean, you know, I know they traded away Delmon Young – you know, but they ended up getting Matt Garza in return. But for the most part, those teams held on to those top prospects, and they just had patience, and they let natural progression take its course, and those guys developed, and they turned themselves into playoff teams. Whereas the Diamondbacks, you know,
they gave up on Carlos Gonzalez.
You know, they traded away Brett Anderson, they traded away Max Scherzer. And now, you know, you look at the...
Chris Carter's not established yet, but he was on that list also.
Absolutely. And you look at that, and, you know, they trade away all that young talent. You look at where the farm system is now, it's not quite as bright of a picture going forward. And I think they really paid for, you know, giving... You know, they got some good talent in return for some of those guys, but, you know, I think they'd much rather right now have Carlos Gonzalez and Brett Anderson... back on that team.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that would make them a much better team going forward if they had those guys still.
The thing that jumped out in doing this Royals list, finished the top 30, I've sent it to Jim as well, and it goes beyond the top 10 because, well, one of the things that helps them on this when I was working it up, 27 players from last year's top 30 still qualified for this year's top 30. They traded one guy in the top 30 from last year away, Carlos Rosa, and two guys, Keila Kahui and Blake Wood no longer qualified. They made it to the majors.
Yeah, their talent was really concentrated really in the lower minors.
And now it's all concentrated. The interesting thing is it's their low A team was not really that stacked, especially Will Myers was there briefly but moved on up. But all of the Royals' talent was largely stacked between high A and double A, and now it's stacked between high A and triple A, probably going into the 2011 season. Their Northwest Arkansas rotation at the start of the year could be John Lamb, Mike Montgomery. Now, again, this is obviously heading into spring training, but John Lamb, Mike Montgomery, Chris Dwyer, Danny Duffy, and Aaron Crow, which that's five pitchers in your top ten in the same rotation. What will be interesting to see going forward, again, they have a lot of depth beyond that too, but now there, it seems like they had a great year last year. Now, it's almost hard to say they could have as good a year next year because – with the exception of really of Crow and Tim Melville, almost every other prospect in their system both stayed healthy and had success.
Yeah, I would not want to be a left-handed hitter in the Texas League early in the year if Northwest Arkansas is on the schedule. And, I mean, who knows what's going to happen with, you know, Arguelles still. But, you know, like you said, almost everybody in that system developed the way that the Royals really
would have hoped,
would have hoped in their best case scenario.
I mean, Hosmer, Moustakas, Myers, Montgomery, Lamb all had big years, all moved up at some point during the season. Dwyer moved up during the season. Duffy, you know, left baseball for a little while, still came back and moved up.
And threw harder.
Yeah, it really was. It was a pretty amazing year for them. And in doing that, you know, that I've when I was finishing up the top 30, I was looking at it. I'm like, you know, the guys I'm ranking 26, 27, 28, 29, 30 on this list, there's a lot of 30s I've done before where I'd probably be putting some of these guys 13, 14, 15. That's the thing that'll be interesting to see. They're going to have a lot of sorting out to do over the next 2 years because, for one, if all of these guys make it, which they're not, but if they did, they have more starters. They have more starting pitchers coming up than they can use. I mean, they have more starters who would project to be starters in the big leagues than they can use. They're not all going to make it. But now part of the test becomes, we saw this, you know, you see this with teams, okay, you've got to figure out which guys are the guys to keep, and then you're going to need to probably move a couple of guys at some point to fill holes in your, you know, in your lineup or in, you know, in your bullpen or whatever that are not going to be filled from the farm system because you're not going to put together a roster in 2012, 2013 that is entirely homegrown guys who've come up in the next, you know, the last 2 years.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for those young players to step in because there are a lot of holes.
There's nothing. That's the interesting thing with this is that there's almost nothing on the Royals, you know, especially in the lineup. There are very few guys who you say, well, you can't move him. Billy Butler is not someone you couldn't move in a deal or something, but Billy Butler is kind of a cornerstone guy for them. Hits in a lot of double plays, but also hits pretty well. Probably a DH for them once all these guys come up.
Mm-hmm.
Going beyond that, who else in that lineup do you say, well, someone says blocked by him?
No, I don't think there's really anybody who's going to be blocked. Once these guys are ready, you know, once Hosmer, once Myers or Moustakas, you know, once these guys are ready to be able to handle big league pitching, I don't see any roadblocks really to keeping them out.
And the other thing with that is that on the pitching side, Greinke, who at some point may be traded, and Soria are probably the only two guys you say, well, no, you know, those guys are guys you build around. The rest of it, the Royals have had a very fallow farm system for a while where they, last 2 years, they've promoted almost no one to the big leagues. So because of that, there's a lot of kind of older guys that they've just been on the roster because you have to fill out a roster. But it'll be interesting to see what the Royals did last year was that they signed several of these one-year free agents and then turned around and dealt them at the trading deadline. Probably going to see some of that again, I would imagine, because, again, they have to fill out a roster to start the season, and not many of these guys are ready to be on the opening day roster. But it does seem like that late this year is when we'll start to see, there'll be a couple of guys, maybe, you know, Tim Collins, maybe Lewis Coleman, couple other guys like that may be there to start the 2011 season, but by the start of the 2012 season, you look at this top 10 and there's a whole lot of guys who could be, you know, be ready for Kansas City.
And then, you know, even beyond that, you have guys lower in the system, Chesler, Cuthbert, Yordano Ventura, Robinson Yambati, you know, Jorge Bonifacio, some really good young Latin players too, who are going to start being able to, you know, who knows if the Royals are going to be able to hit on all their draft picks the way that they've done so to date. But if they don't, they have young players coming over internationally who they're going to be able to supplement, you know, from their draft
picks.
Right,
they also drafted Humberto Arteaga and, signed Arteaga and Orlando Caliste, which that name could be about 12 different iterations I've heard. But they've signed a couple of million-dollar shortstops this year in Latin America as well. But the thing that'll be interesting to see what that is that there was kind of this gap because they drafted high school guys, high ceiling high school guys, followed it up with some college guys like Christian Colon, so they have all these guys packed together. So now when it comes to the draft, they almost have to. They did get some guys like Jason Adam and all this year, but there will be Brett Eibner, you know, is a little slower moving than maybe like Colon, but it'll be interesting to see the draft next year. They may, you know, I'll be interested to see if they go back a little more high school heavy because it's time to build a next wave of prospects. But with that, the thing that jumps out is that we hear more and more about the possibility of hard slotting. And because, well, you know, the draft just unfair and, you know, all these players fall to the Yankees and the Red Sox and all that, I can't think of a team out there who would be more adversely affected by hard slotting than the Royals. Because this is the only competitive advantage they have. They're not going out there and outbidding guys. You know, they're not going to be in the Cliff Lee sweepstakes and say, hey, oh, okay, well, the Yankees are going to give you this. We'll give you $2 million more a year. But when it comes to spending money on getting guys, you know, a little bit later on, Will Myers was a first-round talent by everyone's estimation. But, you know, when he fell a little bit, the asking price was too high for most people. They're like, well, I don't know if he's a $2 million player. The Royals thought he was, and a lot of teams would now pay $2 million for him. They've had multiple guys they've done that with. You make it a hard slot, the Royals don't have Will Myers. The Royals don't have, you know, Tim Melville hasn't worked out yet, you know, but he's still an interesting prospect. They don't have Tim Melville. And you could go, you know, they don't have Jason Adam, who they drafted this year, who would have been in the top 10 in a lot of the list. But do you see, like, I mean, what do you see with hard slotting? You know, would it be possibly a benefit for baseball, or what do you see as kind of the, if that happens?
I think it would hurt it would hurt the Royals. It would hurt a lot of teams that are trying to build through scouting and player development. Teams like the Indians now, who are becoming more aggressive in the drafts, because you know you'll look at the Indians list this year, and you know they went over slot and got guys like LeVon Washington and Tony Walters and, you know, Alex Levisky, you know, didn't make their top 10, but they added a lot of talent through the draft by going over slot, and I think that's going to pay off for teams that are willing to do that down the road. Whereas, you know, some of the other teams that, you know, stick to slot, you know, their drafts just haven't been quite as fruitful.
And going even beyond like the guys like that you mentioned, like guys I mentioned like Will Myers, Eric Hosmer probably goes to college if there's a hard slotting system. I mean, he's not getting $6 million in a hard slot system. It's just not going to be that's going to be interesting to see. If that does happen, does that mean that most all top high school prospects go to college? Because, you know, if you're – well, in Hosmer's case, maybe it doesn't affect him too much because he was a top five pick. But
right.
If you're going to be even a late first-round pick going to college, is the money better just to go to college – to get that college education, and then also with the hope that, hey, you move up a little bit in the draft in 3 years. You mentioned LeVon. Derek Robinson's a guy who hadn't really worked out all that great. He's still a solid prospect for the Royals, but they signed him away from football. You see a lot of guys that, you know, are signed away from football. You're not going to sign high school guys away from football if there's a hard slotting system.
No, there's no chance.
No, it's like because the money just all of a sudden – saying I'm going to turn down $400,000 as a high school senior is really hard to do. saying that I'm going to turn down $100,000 for the chance of being a first-round pick in the NFL in a couple of years is...
Plus, apparently college football pays pretty well,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
so.
apparently it's a lucrative business. But we wanted to touch on the Royals and Indians extensively. We'll have another podcast next week where we'll also dive into the Central as a whole. Well, you know, we have the Tigers up today. What do you think of the Tigers list before we head out?
I think it's... I really like their top two. Jacob Turner is one of the best pitching prospects in the game. I think Nick Castellanos is going to turn into one of the best draft picks of this year's draft. I think he's going to I'd be very surprised if he doesn't hit next year in the Midwest League. I think he has a great swing. I think there's the bat has huge, huge upside, and obviously the Tigers were excited to have him. So I think that's going to be... That's going to turn into one of the bigger – I mean, they paid a lot for him, but for where they got him,
right.
That's going to turn into, I think, one of the bigger steals.
Another guy's example of what we're talking about, you know, with there being the ability to go over slot, that's – the Tigers got him because they were willing to go over slot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so –
First-round supplemental pick.
Those two guys, you know, you can stack them up against, a lot of other top twos out there, and they're going to look pretty well. The problem is after that...
It tails off pretty quick.
Yeah. You know, Andy Oliver, Casey Crosby, they throw hard. You know, how much... Francisco Martinez, Daniel Fields, you know, these guys have some upside, but there's a lot more question marks that they have. You know, Crosby's health, how much guys like Fields or Martinez are going to be able to hit against, you know, more advanced pitching, considering what they've proven already, I realize they were given hard assignments going to Lakeland in the Florida State League, given that Martinez was 19, Fields was also
19 in Martinez's case, but 19 coming out of essentially having played, I mean, he didn't just skip low A. He skipped from low rookie ball.
Yeah, so I understand it was aggressive assignments, but at the same time, for your number 4 or 5 prospects,
you'd rather see those guys at number 10, number 11. Is that a fair
way to put it? I think that's probably the way I'd put it too. Is that those are good guys to have in your system, but for 4 and 5, you'd like to see, and you can't compare it to the Royals.
Well, but
obviously,
that's what I was going
to
say, but it's not a fair comparison. But if you took Chesler Cuthbert and compared him to Francisco Martinez,
you know, I'd probably put Chesler Cuthbert at ahead of Martinez. So
Daniel Fields probably sits somewhere in the 20s on the Royals list, to be honest with you.
I mean, yeah, or
that's not a knock against Daniel Fields, but just he has a long way to prove, you know. Realistically, I mean, like, it's an interesting exercise, but, like, let's say, like, you know, look at, you did the Indians list. Where mm-hmm. would Daniel Fields probably, would he slot in the top 10 on the Indians list?
Yeah, you know, he might slot in somewhere, you know, in that 8 to 10 kind of range, but, you know, I really like LeVon Washington, actually. I think he has the potential to, if everything clicks for him. He could even be the number one prospect in the Indian system next year. I think his upside is tremendous, but I could see putting him ahead of a guy like Walters or Gardner or certainly Hagedin, who, you know, number 10 was a difficult call in the Indian system because Hagedin, you know, there's still some upside there, but certainly a lot of concerns with his delivery and his control at this point.
When you're projecting when he projects possibly as, you know, a setup man, which that's possible, right? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can certainly see him never having the control to even be a reliable setup man. So there's certainly still a high level of risk there. But like with the Tigers, it's good. You know, those guys are good guys to have, but you'd rather see them more in the 11 to 30 range than some of the guys that they have in the top 10.
Right, it does seem like it's a pitching-heavy system overall, too. Like, there's not a whole lot of position prospects in the Tiger system right now. But, as you mentioned, that top two is that's a good place to start. You know, and they have moved guys aggressively, so they also have some guys who are just sitting in the big leagues having already used up their eligibility. But Well, that's our time for today. We do want to remind you again that the Baseball America podcast is sponsored by MLB Network, and we're broadcasting from the MLB Network podcast nook. And we also wanted to remind you to be checking out baseballamerica.com. We're rolling out new top tens. We'll have the other two top tens for the AL Central next week, the White Sox and the Twins. We'll have chats with that for subscribers. We'll follow that up with the AL West, followed then by the NL East, Central, and West. So we'll keep rolling out top tens for really about the next two and a half months still. And also, if you enjoy this, if 10's not enough for you, and we know it's not enough for us, be also making sure, you know, great Christmas gift is the Baseball America Prospect Handbook, which we're working on, because in that you get 900, actually a little bit over 900 scouting reports, depth charts that go well beyond that, depth charts that'll go to really about the top 45 to 60 prospects in every organization. So you can check that out at baseballamerica.com. You go to the click on store, and you can pre-order your Baseball America Prospect Handbook. So for Ben Badler, I'm JJ Cooper. Thanks for the download, and we'll talk to you next week.